This is Chef John Foles welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, and inviting you to join us at the kitchen table for another hour of adventures in food. Each week, we travel from the back roads of Louisiana to the streets of Europe's capitals, delving into food. We talk with chefs, food historians, authors, and producers. We search out current trends, revive forgotten traditions, and naturally, we're going to cook for you. From the Aztecs to the Roman legions, ancient grains like farro have played a vital role in nourishing civilizations. Even today, these grains are flavorful and nutrient-rich. Join me, Chef John Foles, with dietitian Sarah Hebert and Valerie Durant of Sandra's Cafe in Lafayette as we talk about ancient grains on Stirring It Up next. But first, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein. The Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel is ordering most of the department's furloughed civilian employees to return to work. He's making the move based on an interpretation of the Pay Our Military Act, which Congress passed and President Obama signed just before the government shutdown Tuesday. It ensures military personnel who've stayed on the job throughout the shutdown will be paid, and it leaves room for the Pentagon to keep civilians on who support the military at work. Meanwhile, furloughed federal employees being forced to stay home may receive back pay. The House today unanimously passed a bill to reimburse furloughed government employees once the shutdown ends. Republican Congressman Lee Terry says it's the right thing to do.
We can give some level of peace of mind to those employees that they will be reimbursed for their time off. They will get paid.
The Senate is expected to approve the measure, and President Obama has signaled he'll sign it, a rare instance of bipartisan agreement. As for the shutdown itself, NPR's Giles Snyder reports the finger-pointing continues.
President Obama is seeking to keep up the pressure on House Republicans.
Pass a budget that funds our government with no partisan strings attached.
Speaking in his weekly address, Obama used stories of several Americans affected by the shutdown to make his point. For the Republicans, Texas Senator John Cornyn said it's Democrats who are the ones digging in their heels.
Like most Americans, I was disappointed when certain parts of the federal government were forced to shut down because Senate Democrats refused to make any changes whatsoever to the deeply flawed health care law known as Obamacare.
Cornyn said Republicans are eager to end the shutdown, but that progress can't be made without the Democrats' cooperation. Giles Snyder, NPR News, Washington.
Lockheed Martin says it may have to furlough 3,000 workers next week because of the government shutdown. NPR's Larry Abramson says the defense firm is one of many who say they have to send workers home.
Lockheed says that 3,000 employees have been identified for furlough on Monday because the shutdown has made it impossible to work. That's either because the government facilities where they work are closed or because government inspectors are not on the job. Lockheed says those workers have been told to use vacation leave so they can be paid during their furlough. The Aerospace Industries Association says other companies are planning similar furloughs because the Pentagon's Defense Contract Management Agency is not being funded and cannot approve government work. Larry Abramson, NPR News.
Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei is supporting Iranian President Hassan Rouhani's diplomatic overtures at the UN General Assembly meeting last week. Rouhani, who wants the UN to lift crippling sanctions, said Iran is open to improved relations. This is NPR. A man who set himself on fire on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. yesterday has died of his injuries. Police say his burns were so severe they have to use DNA and dental records to identify him. They say they're investigating the man's motives. Mormons are beginning their semi-annual churchwide conference in Salt Lake City this hour, and outside the conference hall, a group of Mormon women is protesting. As NPR's Howard Berkus reports, women are excluded from one of the gathering's key events.
The protest is set outside the priesthood session of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Nearly all male Mormons over the age of 12 attain the Mormon priesthood, and members of the group ordain women want the same role in the faith. They've signed up for standby tickets and plan to queue up in the standby line. The session will be broadcast live for the first time, and women will be permitted to watch on television screens. But a church spokeswoman says no women will be allowed to enter the conference center. The spokeswoman also says women had their own meeting last week of what is known as the Relief Society. Ordain Women considers that a separate and unequal session. Howard Berkus, NPR News, Salt Lake City.
The nation's oldest Medal of Honor recipient has died. Nicholas Oresco had been hospitalized in New Jersey after he fell at an assisted living center. President Harry Truman presented Oresco with the Medal of Honor in 1945 for his actions during World War II. The Army Master Sergeant was badly wounded after he single-handedly took out two enemy bunkers during the Battle of the Bulge. His actions were praised as key to the Allies' victory. Oresco was 96. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
Hey, y'all, Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, the best cultural show on radio. I'd like to thank all of you for joining us at the kitchen table this morning. It's so nice to have you. And I'd like to welcome Michelle York, our executive producer. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good, good. And across the glass wall, we have Deanna Slom, our engineer, keeping the sound balance and music dynamic. How are you doing, Dean?
Hey, guys. Just doing well over here.
Well, great, great, great. Well, Michelle, I know you say you're doing good today. Well, what's in that bowl over there anyway, like Fruit Loops or something? Well,
no. It's not one of your traditional sugary cereals.
Right.
What you're seeing is my effort toward having a better and balanced diet. I have a little flaxseed.
Flaxseed.
You're making fun, but I eat it every day. I eat it with a little yogurt. That's my breakfast. 2 tablespoons.
Well, I've seen you, and all joking aside, that's probably a smart little snack. I mean, most people, when they think about a snack, they walk over to the refrigerator and get one of those ice cream bars like I do. You know, they don't reach for the peach or they don't reach for the banana. They kind of go in and get the peanuts and the sugar-coated pecans out of the cabinet. So yeah, I guess cereal and grain products that we see in the stores today and are all kind of refined or enriched and all of that and stripped of all of that nutritional value. So I guess I'd eat a little flaxseed and whatever else you got in that bowl there. I don't know what else it is. I guess that's good.
Well, it's just flaxseed this morning, though I have had, I don't know if I say this right, muesli, you know, because it has different little grains in it. But I don't like it much because they put coconut in it, but that's a whole other story. But, you know, remember when we talked about wild edibles? And we talked about how kind of our palates were unaccustomed to the bitter taste, or maybe we were startled because they weren't salted or they were unsweetened. It's kind of the same with whole grains. I can't say that it's truly an acquired taste because I really loved flaxseed the first time I tasted it. But whole grains, or ancient grains as we call them, they're pure, they're rich. They're unfamiliar, but in a good way.
I think that's the best way to describe them. I think when people get into experimenting or trying to reach out toward healthiness and better eating habits, and then they start to look at some of the ancient grains that's so available in so many of the stores today. I mean, you walk in some of the big box stores, you see a whole shelf that used to be an aisle that you would find cornmeal and you would find flour and you would find cake flour. Today you walk in and it's an unbelievable array of all of these unrecognizable to many shoppers what these ancient grains are or what they're for. Flax, for instance, dates back to the days of the ancient civilizations. It was used medicinally by the Greeks and Egyptians for those gastrointestinal problems and an anti-inflammatory. In the Historia Naturalis, the Encyclopedia of Natural Science, written by Pliny the Elder back in 2379, flaxseed had 30 uses associated with it.
Tests today have shown that flaxseed is actually good in controlling high blood pressure. It reduces cholesterol levels. It contains the highest amount of lignans of any food, and lignans contain estrogen-like chemicals. It makes flaxseed especially good for women, so maybe that's one of the reasons I like it so much. It's also an antioxidant, aids in preventing heart disease and cancer. Filled with omega-3 fatty acids, improves the immune system, helps brain function and memory. Personally, I love it, but I like bulgur wheat, too.
Well, even the names, I think, tend to be a little strange, you know, when you think about it. And maybe we should start to keep some containers of some of these in the kitchen. And I'm not saying that you should become overnight an aficionado of all of this, but it's important that you come to know this. Another ancient grain, possibly the oldest of all, that you hear more and more about today, especially on restaurant menus, is farro. It's actually considered an heirloom grain, and it's sometimes referred to as the mother of all wheat because it's been the forerunner of all other wheat species. In fact, it was Rome's food of champions and was a major force, I should say a great food source for the Roman legions, and it was even used as currency. People would swap it off for fair value. Today, farro is still the main feature of the traditional foods of Tuscany. So you find it in so many of the dishes when you travel to Italy into that Tuscan region. It's high in fiber, naturally, so that's great. People are always looking for that. Protein and iron and the nutrients are very easily absorbed by the body, and I think that's a key to most of this stuff.
And, you know, realizing that we're a rice-growing region, and, of course, we all love rice, but sometimes you may be looking for a light-tasting substitute for rice, particularly brown rice, and farro is a good substitute for that. I like to describe it because it's an elegant, nutty flavor. You might detect little hints of oat and barley in there as well. And while we're on the subject of the health qualities of these old grains, we can't leave out the popularity of some of these gluten-free grains and that have kind of resurfaced, and millet is one of them. They kind of have a bad rap, you know, because a lot of people use it for bird seed, and it is popular, but not to be cliche, it's really not for the birds. It is a good grain. In fact, the origins of millet are from the Far East. Even Marco Polo wrote about it in his journals as one of the five sacred crops of ancient China.
And I think a lot of this stuff can be traced back to Marco Polo. It can be traced back to China for sure, because it's such an ancient civilization that the Chinese had been experimenting with some of these natural medicines, so to speak, some of these really, really great foods that are good for the body. So naturally, the five sacred crops of ancient China would include many of these things. It's even referenced in the Old Testament as an ingredient to be added to bread. Millet is absolutely loaded with fiber, with nutty, somewhat sweet flavor, and it can be used to add body to meat and to vegetable stocks. It's a great rice substitute and even a great side dish cooked and drizzled with olive oil. You see that a lot in the Middle East. A little salt and pepper or local seasoning sometimes is added to it, obviously. It's a surprise to your dinner guest if you put it on the table and serve it in either form of a side dish or a salad or whatever. It's going to be a surprise to people sitting at the table. And here in Louisiana, we love grits, any kind of which way, shape, or form. But if you want to broaden your culinary horizons, just try a little millet as porridge in the morning instead of your normal microwave oatmeal.
Well, it is good to try new things. And I'd said earlier, sometimes I use bulgur wheat to replace rice in dishes. Most people look at me strange when I say I'm having red beans and bulgur wheat instead of red beans and rice, but it's good. And another grain in the gluten-free zone is amaranth. From an ancient society on the other side of the globe that we were talking, the Aztecs in Mesoamerica cultivated this grain, used it for food as well as in their religious rituals. Just as farro was to the Romans, amaranth was to the Aztecs a real superfood.
Amaranth, though, belongs to a different plant species, and you're right about that. It's not one of the cereal grains, but the nutrients and uses are very similar, so we include that along with those other ancient ancient grains that are so important and seen so often today.
Mm-hmm. And like any food, we always like if it has a nice, colorful history, and amaranth does. Before the Spanish conquistadors reached the New World, the Aztecs were mixing it with honey, and they were actually molding deities, their own little religious objects. And during religious ceremonies, the images were worshipped, but then they were broken into pieces and distributed to everyone to eat. Of course, the Spanish conquistadors, kind of doubling in some aspects, I guess, as missionaries, outlawed the practice because they wanted to convert the people. But because the grain grew so easily, it was a good grain, their efforts to eradicate the crop failed, and we're kind of glad for that.
Well, thank God for that. Anyway, y'all, we are certainly a grain society as well. There's no doubt about it. I mean, when you look at the history of Louisiana, and because of the wet delta land of the South where rice grew so easily, and once rice arrived and became one of the great cash crops of the South, needless to say, you found a tremendous amount of rice growing here. And then corn, we talked about grits a minute ago, but let's not fail to remember that corn coming from the Mesoamerican empires and first being found and grown in South Central America and then up through Mexico to the New World became, you know, our grits and our cornmeal and our fish fry and our polenta and all of those great, great things that we refer to as the grains we know best in the world today, corn, rice, for sure. And of course, when we talk about things, many of the grains we talked about today are growing now in Louisiana as cash crops in place of sugar, in place of rice. We're starting to see a lot of these grains being grown here. So,
as a population ages, I mean, I am starting to learn that your body changes and you need different health foods and you can't subsist on a sugar-filled diet. So you start looking for options and you do look for more nutrient-rich foods. You do look for more of the antioxidant foods, the omega-3 fatty acids. I mean, you're looking for all of those things. So you start thinking about a diet and seeing how you can incorporate more grain because we're a processed society in a lot of ways. We grab and go, and the grab and go is not always the most nutritious.
Tasty, but not nutritious. At the same time, it's interesting how the public drives the retail market. No doubt about it. The minute you start to experiment, you travel, you go, I mean, we just got back from Israel a while back. And in Israel, I mean, every day we sat down to breakfast, lunch, and dinner to foods that were really not in any way, shape, or form recognizable to us as everyday fare here. But certainly they included a tremendous amount of grain, and you became very used to it after a couple of days. Once you experience it, and once you see food television picking it up, then you start to see recipe books starting to add chapters on healthy grains. Then all of a sudden you go into the grocery store looking for it. You don't find it. You ask the grocer, and the grocer said, well, let me look into that. Then they look at the competition down the street with aisles full of these bags of interesting colored boxes and bins of grains. They're going to say, well, you know what? There's a movement. So all of a sudden, what was once totally out of the conversation becomes a mainstay in American culinary society, so to speak. And I guarantee at our restaurant, just about every night, there's going to be two or three different grains on the menu. We're going to take a very short break. And when we come back, we have a couple of dietitians who's going to be here, but they're not dietitians working in some hospital. They actually have a cafe. And we're going to talk to them about some great, great healthy foods.
Shall the barley grain shot forth his head with a beard like any man? And it's Tyree Igory Arian, the barley grain for me. Then the reaper come with a sharp hook and he made me no reply. He caught me by the whiskers and he cut me above the thigh. And it's Tyree Igory Arian.
Glide through your weekday mornings at 11 a.m. here on the Medicine Ball Caravan. I'm Cecil Doyle. Mondays through Thursdays, we cruise through a fast-paced hour of sounds both old and new, as well as keeping you up to date with area music and arts. The Medicine Ball Caravan, 11 to noon weekdays here on KRVS.
A chance to listen through new Gaelic voices and music from Celtic roots came second top in our website poll of programme choices. So this week we have Julie Fowlis, Nuala Kennedy, Bodega, Kathleen McInnes and more from Ireland and Scotland. Join us for contemporary voices from ancient vocal traditions on the Thistle and Shamrock.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6 here on KRVS.
Hi everyone, this is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we've got the one, the only, Louisiana favorite, Tab Benoit, on the legendary Rhythm and Blues Cruise. It's so good, we're going to spend the entire show with him. That, plus our feature host Barbara Ching, will continue her look at country music and the blues. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
Down to the crowd and poked me in the chest, asked me a question I hadn't heard yet. You could say she took me by surprise. Bright blue eyes and auburn hair, she looked so good I had to stare. My ears perked up when I heard what she said. Hey, are you calling Petty Griffin? Do you like this redhead? She likes you and she would love to dance. If you would be so inclined, we can trip to paradise, spend the night dancing cheek to cheek. Love struck of that girl.
Slum, I want to know where the grain was in that song, huh?
What do you think?
Auburn hair, you know, jeans or whatever. Where's the grain? Ancient grain should have been mentioned in that song somewhere.
Maybe she was harvested.
Maybe she was corn fed or something. I'm not sure. Anyway, welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio, celebrating our, 17th year?
Yeah, into our 17th year.
Celebrating our 17th year. Anyway, it's so nice to have all of you with us today. And Michelle, today we're doing a show on grains, things that are now finding their way into mainstream and in just about everybody's cupboard, whether you know what to do with them or not.
That's right.
Between food television, between great cookbooks, between restaurants focusing at least a segment of their menu to healthier, more nutritious aspects of food. No doubt about it. We certainly have this as a great category. So today we have some great guests to help us out through this, huh?
Yes, we do. We have Sarah Hebert and Valerie Durant of Sandra's Cafe in Lafayette. They're both registered dietitians. Valerie spends most of her time in the store where you can purchase health foods and grains and flours, local produce. And Sarah spends most of her time in the cafe working on menus with the chefs. They both grew up in Louisiana. They earned their dietetics degrees from ULL, University of Louisiana at Lafayette. And then following their internships, they started their careers actually in the medical field working in hospitals. But it didn't take long before they realized they needed to get to the people and start healthy eating practices before they got to the hospital. They wanted to truly make a difference in how people eat and to help promote healthier lifestyles through food. So working with the organic local produce and organic grains, seeds, flowers, they feel that they are promoting healthier eating for their customers. And at the same time, it's delicious food as well. So Sarah and Valerie, welcome to Stirring It Up. It is a pleasure to have you with us today.
Hi, thanks for having us. It's a pleasure to be here.
Girls, let me ask you a question. There's a rumor out there that the University of Lafayette, all graduates from the dietetic program over there, actually are allowed to increase calorie salt content in all diets up about 300 milligrams and about 400 calories. Is that true?
No. I'm gonna say that's false.
Shucks, I thought for sure that was true in Lafayette.
You can always have wishful hoping, though.
Well, the good news is you can still make great-tasting food healthier. That's good, and I'm sure y'all doing it. Now, just to kind of kick this thing off, girls, welcome, and thank you so much for being here with us. Valerie, why don't you tell us a little bit about you grew up in there. Tell us a little bit about your early beginnings in Cajun country. Where are you from?
Well, I'm from Lafayette. I grew up here, went to high school here. I spent about a year in Colorado going to college. Actually, my parents moved to Colorado and opened up a Cajun restaurant there for a while. So, you know, I know a little bit about Cajun food, but I've always been interested in healthy eating, you know, how our food affects the way that we feel. So I've always kind of been, you know, my family's made fun of me for being a health nut, of course. But I guess learning how to, you know, make Cajun food healthy has always kind of been an interest of mine. You know, I started in the dietetics program, did internship, took my exam, and then I decided that, you know, the medical field just, you know, wasn't what I was looking for. I was kind of looking for something more, I guess, hands-on and showing people how to eat. And I just happened to start working here at Sandra's, and it's been great being able to physically show people the foods that they should be eating.
That's absolutely fantastic. And Sarah, you're working with the chefs in the cafe, and it tells me that you obviously may have a food background as well. Tell me a little bit about your background.
Well, I'm also from Lafayette, Louisiana, born and raised. Whenever I was younger, I grew up on a farm, and my grandfather owned a grocery store, and I was always in there. I was always stealing gum, too, and he made me put it back.
I bet he did.
Yeah. So as I was growing up in high school, I didn't really know too much about nutrition, and then as soon as I got into college, I was just fascinated with nutrition. Went through dietetics, graduated, did my internship, became an RD, and then I did the hospital maybe a month doing the dietitian clinical area and didn't like it at all. Came to Sandra's, started working here, absolutely loved it. People come here to ask you questions, to inquire about nutrition and want to get healthier. And then I started working in the kitchen, and that was just a lot of fun. I felt like my life was complete. I love cooking, especially at my house and for my husband, and I absolutely love cooking.
I think what you just said is true for most good cooks or even great cooks. They're not afraid of the pot. They're not afraid of the fire, and they just kind of realize that you can't mess up a recipe. It just becomes a new creation that may be better than the one you were trying for anyway.
Well, I don't know about that. I think I defy that.
Now, tell us a little bit before we jump into some other questions. Tell us a little bit about Sandra's, if you would, Valerie, a little bit about the origin of it. Where does it come from? Tell us a little bit about the place.
Well, Sandra's originated, the original owner was a lady named Sandra Terrio. I've never met her, but she passed away some years ago. But I hear about her a lot through the customers that come in that, you know, have known her, you know, 20-plus years. I hear a lot of amazing things about her. You know, people tell me that she was a healer, that she was, you know, some people called her a witch doctor. she was kind of a pioneer in, you know, the health industry in Lafayette. I guess she opened up in this location over 20 years ago, and it was a health food store, and I think it was always her dream to do plate lunches. She kind of started up the plate lunches right before she passed away, and then somebody else took over the business, did away with the plate lunches, and after about 2 years or so, the business was about to close, and a man named Mr. Glenn Murphy, who also owns Old Time Grocery, it's a po' boy place over by the UL campus.
Right, know it well, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, most people know of it. He came in to look at some kitchen equipment to buy, and he, I guess, just kind of fell in love with the store and ended up buying the whole business. And I guess he was kind of an unlikely owner for a health food store, you know, being the owner of a po' boy shop.
Right.
But he kept the only worker that was still here and kind of built up the stock and, you know, made sure to hire people that kind of knew what they were talking about as far as health food goes and built it back up, started, you know, the cafe going, the plate lunches are going strong. And customers who come in, you know, tell us all the time that, you know, Sandra would be proud. So,
well, good,
you know, we kept
good.
Her name on the business, and we keep her picture up on the wall. So hopefully she's looking down and she's happy with what we're doing.
Well, tell us a little bit about your specific roles in the business there and what you do. Kind of what happens on a daily basis if I walked in there? How do you help me? How do you guide me on what to purchase or what something tastes like? How does that work?
Well, I am in charge of the supplement section, so I'm usually over there, you know, just making sure I have everything I need on the shelf and kind of explaining to people about different supplements that we may have. But, of course, as a dietitian, I kind of tried to gradually push people over towards the food or the produce section. you know, if they're looking to better their health. You know, we also run the registers. So we're kind of all over the place between the cafe and the registers. And, you know, if somebody comes in, both Sarah and I will be willing to walk through the store with them, give them a little tour.
We call that the 25-cent tour.
Yeah.
A very quick run around through the store, telling them what we do over here. But, yeah, we call that the 25-cent tour, and tips are, you know, always accepted.
And, Sarah, do you actually work with the chefs to create dishes, or are you in the kitchen doing a lot of it yourself from time to time?
It's funny you say that. We actually had a little experiment this week, try to get some new plate lunches in there, and the owner, Mr. Glenn, he asked me and another employee to get in the kitchen and start cooking up different things, and I did some pork chops, and I smothered that in the oven, and I had some seasoning, which we use Spike. It's a no-sodium seasoning, and it's just a bunch of really awesome herbs, and it's gluten-free. I threw that on there and kind of wrapped thin slices of bacon, and then I had a plum reduction sauce that I put on top, and then I had some brown and black rice with just a little bit of parsley to give it color. So I was in the kitchen actually Wednesday doing that, and then we had another employee, Lizzie, who came in, and she did like a stuffed portobello. So, you know, we're really trying to keep our staples that we have over here at Sandra's, you know, our hamburger steak, our chicken shawarma, spaghetti and meatballs. And then we're really, our other entrees are trying to, you know, get some new ones in there, still keeping the Southern fare. But again, it's not your typical, you know, grease, loads of salt. I'm sorry, fault. you know, we try to keep the sodium down. We do include the salt, but not as much.
Don't you find that it's true, regardless in what type of food you're preparing, whether it's, in your case, healthier choices, don't you find that it's always about the description of the food and the fact that it's regionally inspired or recognizable, regardless of whether you've removed the salt or taken 90% of the fat out by using grass-fed or whatever? Don't you find that people migrate toward things they understand and recognize and will eat it and like it as much just because in their mind clicks into the fact that the pork chops with the bacon, no matter what you did with it, is still going to be pork chops and I'm going to love it.
People do like the things that they can recognize. It seems like there's two types of people. One who like to kind of stick with the things that they recognize, and then there's other people who come in and they just want the craziest, you know, newest things that they can find. So.
Experimentation, sure. What about, you mentioned a couple of times local produce, you mentioned a couple of times local meat. Tell us a little bit about your sourcing in the area. Are you dealing with farmers markets or local farmers?
Yeah, actually, we get like 2 produce trucks a week. And a lot of times, whenever we do have the farmers markets, some on Tuesday, Wednesday, some on Saturday, well, most of them on Saturday, if they don't sell all their stuff, they actually come over here and we buy it from them and we sell them at our place. We also have another local lady that comes in and she does some sprouting. We have, I think, some sunflower sprouts.
Tell about the little old man with his watermelon.
Oh, yeah. He's like, I don't know, he's almost pushing 80 years old. And he comes in, like, we had ordered, oh, like, 25 watermelons. I'm telling you, this watermelon probably weighed, I mean.
He brought them by the truckload.
Yeah.
It was the best watermelon I've ever tasted.
Yeah, I feel like he's going to live forever. Because, I mean, he pulled all 25 into our store. They were huge. And, I mean, as soon as you slice them open, you could just smell the sweetness from across the room.
That was good.
And so we have, you know, local watermelon. We have local eggs from the Gautreaux. Our grass-fed beef, we have always in stock. We have, you know, the liver. We have cuts of meat. We have ground beef.
We get some goat's milk from Westmar Farms up in Moroville.
Yeah.
Right, sure.
That's a huge seller over here.
So do y'all ever do, like, cooking classes or tastings for some of those people who are the traditionalists but maybe want to stick a toe in the water?
Well, we don't do cooking classes, which I would absolutely love to do. But whenever a new customer comes in and they're not sure of a certain item that we have, or we always give them a small sample of our food. Our cooks in the back, they're amazing, and they'll bend over backwards for our customers, and they will put in a small little cup and give them a taste of whatever we're cooking so that they can come up with a good decision on what meal they want to pick, or, you know, to their liking.
Well, you know what? One thing I found a few years ago working with dietitians, I created a Louisiana cookbook called Something Old, Something New, Louisiana Cooking with a Change of Heart. And my goal working with the dietitians was to take Louisiana's most iconic dishes, whether it was the red beans and rice with sausage or whether it was the smothered pork chops, and how could we reduce as much of the salt and as much of the fats or whatever in the dish to get it to a point where it tastes as good, but yet cut the sodium, et cetera, at least 50% in the dish. And that was kind of like revolutionary, you know, 10 years ago when I did it. And y'all doing it matter-of-factly because, I mean, you're the experts at it, not me. I'm a chef whose job it is on most days of my life to bring people to the graveyard with my... and, you know, we're always trying to figure out how to pile things on to make sure. But yet at the same time, We are much more cognizant today of the need to look responsibly at food. And obviously in your operation there, that's what you're doing. You're introducing the customer to good taste and high quality, but yet at the same time, certainly reflecting on the fact that the foods will be healthier, they will be more nutritious for you, etc. Now, I think in Louisiana, traditionally, we have always migrated toward the freshness and toward the natural. It's just that our cooking habits between the seven nations that created Creole and Cajun cooking certainly has been these big, strong working families and farmers certainly needed that energy. I want to make sure, tell everybody where the store, everything's going to be on our website, guys, so don't y'all worry about where to find these two ladies. Tell us where exactly your store is located.
We're actually located off of Johnson Street, the intersection of Camellia and Johnson. There is a Chevron station right there, and that's where Rena is. We're down Rena Drive.
Right, sure.
And we're actually right across the street from a music place called ASA. We have a yellow sign in the front saying
Sarah, I've never heard so unique a description. I go down the gravel road to the yellow sign, and I'm sure everybody's grabbing a pen right now. Fred, yellow sign.
Well, I mean, where we are down Rena Drive, it's a small little road, and people get so confused as they're trying to get it. Now, where are y'all again?
We're going to put a little map on our website, and let me just say this. Sarah, you know, I did write a book working with dietitians, so I got to work with a lot of them, and we had a lot of fun doing it. So if ever you want to do something in the store where Chef John Fultz comes in and we cut up together on the best of Louisiana cooking in your store using some of your ingredients and how you and I get together in the kitchen in Valerie, I'm ready to do it. Y'all let me know when you want to do that, okay?
You know what? Sign me up right now.
Y'all sound like a lot of fun over there. And let me just tell our listeners, these are the kind of people we go out to search every day. Sandra's Cafe, obviously, you know, kind of this healthy Cajun international food combination going over there. You don't want to miss it. Just go to our website. All of the information on the store will be there. And certainly you want to try it out. Ladies, thank you all so much for being with us today. You're a great addition to Lafayette, no doubt about that, and to Louisiana. And you sound like a lot of fun. So no wonder the store is a success.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking to y'all. Thank you.
Bye-bye, y'all. Thank you.
Bye.
All right, everybody. We're going to be back in just a second, and we're going to do a little cooking ourselves. Be back in a minute.
Night and noon, buckwheat cakes steaming on the griddle. Buckwheat cakes, Lordy, ain't they fine? Buckwheat cakes fried in butter, sweeter than the melon on the watermelon vine. Buckwheat cakes, fry 'em to a frazzle. Buckwheat cakes, then bring 'em in to me. You can have everything in this wide, wide world but your ever-loving buckwheat cakes. Buckwheat cakes, steaming on the griddle. Buckwheat cakes.
More on the stories from National Public Radio News, as well as streaming audio at KRVS's website at krvs.org.
Did you know that the world's biggest community of Lebanese immigrants is in Brazil? Or that Lebanese producers and artists have changed the course of popular music in Ghana? Hello, I'm Georges Collinet. Join me for Tales of the Lebanese Diaspora next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi, this is Bill Bowens from The Dirty Rice Show, inviting you to join either Mr. Lee Klein, Peter, or myself every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Dirty Rice right here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, Public Radio for Acadiana.
Greetings. Move to KRVS every Sunday night for 2 hours of hardcore classic Rasta reggae radio right here on Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights 9 to 11 p.m., Saturday mornings 1 to 3 here on KRVS, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Day we worked and broke our aching backs, pulling peels of lint to make the fin cairn flax. We wash our hands and faces and we disinfect our clothes. We scrub behind our kneecaps and we clean between our toes. We douse our hair with hair oil and we rub it down our backs.
That's a great song. Anyway, welcome back, y'all, to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, the best cultural show on radio. Today we're talking about ancient grains. And before we get to the recipe, what about Facebook, Dean? Anything interesting happening there for us?
Something very interesting has happened on Facebook. Most recently, we have been getting a little commotion. The president of the Stovehound Club, Mr. David Hubble, had a little... a recommendation. He said that we haven't done a show on beignets recently.
Actually, I don't know if we've ever done a show on beignets.
No beignets?
We've done hot beignets and warm boudoirs.
I have a great new recipe for beignets. It's very easy to do. And plus, I have a great recipe for the rice beignet, ultimate rice beignet, a collet cake. That's also a form of a beignet. But let's do a show on beignets. Write that down. We're going to get that done. Well, good. And Facebook.com/stirringitup, S-T-I-R-R-I-N, one word, Stirring It Up Radio. Just go there, visit the site, drop us a couple of lines. By the way, we're going to be smoking about we're smoking 100 pounds of andouille, 100 pounds of sausage. We're doing some bacon, and I'm smoking some onions as well. For an onion jam that I'm making. Ooh. for a client of mine. And
chef, call me ignorant, but what is an onion jam? Is that a
Well, in this particular case, it's a cherry and pecan wood smoked onion. We're taking Vidalia onions and peeling them in four, and we're going to put them in the smokehouse to smoke them with a pecan and a cherry wood.
Oh, wow.
And after smoking them for about 6 hours until they're nice and soft and fully smoked, then we're going to puree those onions with other ingredients to create like a fig jam or like a marmalade.
Gotcha.
But it's going to be sweet and it's going to be spreadable, and you can put it on top of things. And the onion flavor, the acidity of the onion is gone because now it's a jam. Onion flavor, for all practical purposes, has been turned into this lush, because onions are sweet. Onions are full of sugar.
Okay,
So you might serve it with meat, you might serve it with dessert, you might serve it with cheese?
Yeah, I would definitely serve it with cheese and meat. It's a great burger topping.
Sure,
an onion jam on top of a great grilled burger. My God, nothing better than that. Or on top of a steak. I mean, you got steak with a little gloss or a little natural sauce, natural drippings, and a little spoon of that onion jam on the side. So
I have a suggestion. Next time we're talking about this, maybe you could bring a sample.
Easy to do. I'm going to bring some next week because I'm making it this week. What about the books, Michelle? What else do we have?
Well, the first book that I want to recommend, it's a James Beard award-winning book, Whole Grains Every Day, Every Way, written by Lorna Sass. Ms. Sass, got to love her name, right? Ms. Sass is known as the queen of pressure cooking from her three cookbooks about the subject. And she's written many vegetarian cookbooks, vegan cookbooks, from the days when she was strictly vegan. She's returned to eating chicken and meats now, so we're glad to have her back. But she gives new life to ancient grains by showing the reader how to incorporate them into other foods, including meat. It's something that I've thought about for a long time. You know, instead of stuffing with meat, I could have added a little wheat to it, or I could have added this and, you know, had a little healthier twist. So she's actually taken my good idea and she's made a book on it. Her recipes are easy to follow, minimal ingredients, great flavor. So you definitely want to take a look at that book, Whole Grains, Every Day, Every Way. Now, there's another book that I'd like to recommend. It's called Wheat-Free Diet Book. Essential wheat-free foods and delicious wheat-free cooking for a healthy wheat-free diet and lifestyle. Now, that's a long title, but it's an important subject. It was written by Leslie Bayer and David Clements. And I hate to admit it, but, you know, it's getting harder and harder to kind of control the weight gain. You have to be vigilant every day watching what you eat. And especially it's hard around here because John's always got a little something in the kitchen, or there's, you know, fresh French bread coming out of the ovens in the bakery. Kind of tough. But this book gives recipes for substituting other grains for wheat. So you have buckwheat quinoa pancakes. You have chocolate chip peanut butter cookies using oats instead of flour. All really great, great ideas and a good start. If you want to make wheat-free breads, this book has recipes other than grain-based flours like soy, rye, barley, rice. So the book kind of helps you to think outside of the box, so to speak. Both are wonderful additions to your culture and culinary library. We'll have all the information about the books on our website, www.jfoles.com.
Well, that sounds good. A lot of great information in there. We have pumpkin and saffron risotto because, you know, I definitely want to talk about a little pumpkin possibly with that risotto, that nice grain. And then tabbouleh. You eat tabbouleh?
Yeah, I do. No,
great, and because, I mean, that uses bulgur, right?
I like bulgur wheat.
You ever get into that? Now, what are you eating? The other day at that little meeting, you took out a thing of yogurt, and then you put about 4 spoons or something on top of it that came out of an unrecognizable jar. So what was it that you were eating?
Flaxseed.
Flaxseed.
Mm-hmm. It's flaxseed.
Yeah. And is that good for what? Blood pressure?
Blood pressure, cholesterol, helps with memory.
Helps with memory, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm remembering all kinds of stuff now.
Yeah? Does it work better than a treadmill?
I think it does. You've been treadmilling?
I've been treadmilling, but I hadn't been eating healthy.
Yeah, no kidding.
Let me tell you one thing, though. Seriously, I eat yogurt, and I'm hungry. I'm still hungry, or I'm hungry an hour later.
Yeah.
But by adding 2 tablespoons of the flaxseed, it does kind of satisfy that hunger. And, you know, they say that a lot of times, the adding fiber like that to your diet, adding grains, it does last longer. Where sugar, you burn it off immediately and you're hungry again. So you've expended a lot of calories for no gain because you're still hungry. But actually, the flaxseed and yogurt fills me up for a while.
Well, you know, one of the things I've been doing, I was kidding about the treadmill, but I have been, and you know, I'm like everybody else in the country. A couple of years ago, I went on this great diet because my cardiologist, I don't have any heart trouble, but I do every year take a full cardiology test, and I do the treadmill at my cardiologist's office. Dr. Boyd Helm, he's my buddy. Anyway, so Boyd Helm was telling me, I said, well, you know, I always have a problem with my weight, being a chef. I'm always tasting, always eating. He said, well, look, he said, I have the greatest diet for you in the world and the greatest exercise program in the world, and anybody can do it, and I promise you, you will lose weight and maintain it. And I said, okay, what is it? He said, well, number one, he says, walk on your treadmill at a normal walk 1 mile. And you can do a 20-minute mile, you can do a 25-minute mile, but a 20-minute mile kind of works up the speed of the thing, and you say, get your heart rate up to about 160, you know, and maintain it that for a little while, and then you just walk on down 30 minutes. You say you can do a slower walk if you want. You can do a 30-minute mile. He said, do that 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. He says, whatever you're eating now to have gained all that weight, just keep eating it. Lemon pie, rice dressing.
Keep eating it.
Keep eating it. Pork chops smothered down in gravy, grits and eggs, don't matter. Just eat half of it. Just eat half of it. Eat whatever you're eating. Don't stop. Eat half of it. And if you eat after 6 o'clock at night, which most chefs like you are used to doing, big meal at 11 o'clock at night, do not eat after 6 o'clock. And if you do eat after 6 o'clock, eat a quarter of what you would normally eat, not a half. And if you're home, just eat something light, like a little yogurt, a little fruit maybe, just something to kind of keep you going. And you're going to get used to that regimen after about 2 weeks, and you're going to find no problem with it. Well, let me tell you what, I went from 217 to 100, I think it was 78 pounds.
Wow, come on.
And 6 months it took me, 6 months, but it just kind of peeled that weight off. And for 2.5 years, I did it, and then I got off of it. For whatever reason, boredom or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and probably having to taste a lot with the restaurant opening, too. I mean, to be fair.
Yeah. Well, in the last year and a half, I've gone from 178 to 199.
Came back on.
All, and took 2 years to do it because I wasn't, you know, just gouging myself at all kind of stuff. Well, Monday, I got back on the treadmill.
Good.
I went back to the regimen. I got on the treadmill, 20-minute mile. I've done it every day this week because I want to get mentally into it. And so Monday through Friday, I've been on the treadmill. I went back to my regimen, and I'm 8 pounds down.
Already?
That's in 5 working days, 6 working
Holy
days.
Holy cow.
Goodness.
That
now, of course,
sound
a
healthy.
Lot of. Well, I'm eating all.
I mean, that's a lot.
8 pounds? Well, half of it's water.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Take four off. So I lost 4 pounds, right? And the water comes up because I'm not eating salt, not as much salt, and I'm eating less food. At night, I eat one beautiful white peach and a banana. That's it.
So those late-night meals, that's the key.
That kills you, especially for me. I go to get a big meal at 10 o'clock at night and go right to bed, steak, potato. My God, can you imagine how much weight that puts on? But remember again, walk the treadmill nice and slow. Now, this is, and I'm not giving you his recommendation for you. I'm giving you his recommendation for me.
Okay.
So don't anybody take this recommendation as for you. Everybody's different. But I went ahead and took his advice. 30-minute mile. I walk a 20-minute mile, so I'm walking pretty good. And at about 19 minutes, I get to 190 heart rate from a 75 or whatever I start with. And then 30 minutes, I'm done. I walk it off. Then I don't eat anything after that except a little fruit at night. Now, I don't know how long I can maintain that. I'm going to just get back to eating a quarter of what I would normally eat if it's after 6 o'clock.
A quarter
o'clock.
Of a steak.
And that's not hard to do. If you think about it, once you get regimented, you don't need that much food.
Right.
Especially if you're eating your normal breakfast, just half of that big plate. Now, talking about dropping weight, not maintaining. Once you maintain, you can add to the diet. But once you trying to get back to the optimum weight, as I did, 178, then I could do a little more. I just have to be respectful of that regimen.
Well, how do you feel, Chef? How does it
feel? I feel great. I feel good. Yeah.
You hungry? Just asking. No,
well, it's amazing how food is a mental thing.
Right.
Much more a mental thing than it is a physical thing. You can do with a lot less food than what we eat. We just eat because, and again, like I said, this is my regimen and it works for me. So I would consult my own physician to get. But he was so matter of fact when he told me that. He said, whatever you're eating, don't cut it out. The chocolate cake, eat it, because the worst thing you can ever do is to take anything out of your diet. It's a joke if you do that. You're going to crave it. You will crave it.
Yeah.
So you said just cut all your calories down in half, that's all. Well, 50% calorie reduction, that's pretty good.
You know what I do? I guess everybody has their own kind of regimen that they do. But because there are so many apps today on iPhones,
okay.
I use MyFitnessPal, and there's a feature you just scan, you know, whatever you've eaten. If it has a barcode, it enters it automatically, and it tells you all the nutritional value of that food item. The calories, and you also, every morning, first thing I do before I drink anything, you know, I weigh. And then that keeps me cognizant of where I am. And if you get too far, the ounces add up, you know, point four the next day. And you can also enter your exercise on there. So you put your cardiovascular, whatever you've done, it deducts it from the calories that you're recommended. And it just, you know, you don't have to be strict about it, but it does help you keep it in line, because it's shocking when you see, you know, because I love French fries, but then I have to make a choice. Am I going to spend 500 calories on French fries as a meal, or am I going to?
Well, I'll tell you something else I did yesterday. In fact, as you know this, I went to one of the running shops in New Orleans, and I got, which I hadn't gotten before, one of the running chronometers, one of the watches that I wear this band across my chest, you know. Very easy to do, and you just look at the watch. It syncs with that. I say a watch. It's a little calculator, and it gives you your heart rate. It tells you how many calories you're burning, and it keeps track of everything. It keeps track of your daily movement, so I can go back to my – I can hit my history, and it tells me how many days I've been running since I started walking, how much, how many calories have I dropped, how has my heart rate moved up and down since then. It's very interesting. Let me tell you about tabbouleh, y'all. Tabbouleh is, again, Middle Eastern diet. You're going to hear all about tabbouleh. This is a great salad that you can make to begin every meal. It's filling. And you're going to start off with a half a cup of bulgur. You say you like the bulgur wheat.
I do. I love the bulgur wheat.
Okay. And what you're going to do in a medium sauce pot, you're going to bring 2 cups of water to a rolling boil. You're going to take a half a cup of bulgur wheat and put it in a bowl. And once it starts, the water boils, you pour it over the bulgur wheat and you let it sit covered about a half inch of that boiling hot water, and you let it soak for 30 minutes. After 30 minutes, you're going to find that the bulgur wheat is nice and chewy, softened, but not hard. You can still get a nice little bite to it. You drain the bulgur wheat, and then you'll put it in a larger bowl. Into that, you're going to add 1/4 cup of extra virgin olive oil. You're going to add 2 tablespoons of lemon juice. You're going to divide that. 1/2 teaspoon salt, 1.5 cups of chopped parsley, 1/2 cup of chopped mint, 1/4 cup of sliced thinly green onions. Then you're going to put your salad mix. You're going to put 1 cup of chopped cucumbers in it, and you're going to put the 1.5 cups. You can do 2 cups if you want to, of a nice diced tomato. And I always like to salt my tomato a little bit first. So into the bowl of the bulgur wheat, you're going to add all of those ingredients, the olive oil, the lemon juice. You're going to put a little salt and pepper in there, the parsley, the mint, the green onion. So you can see all the green going in there, the cucumber, the tomato. You're going to mix all of that nicely. You're going to toss the bulgur back in and coat all of that beautifully. And you're going to divide it into equal portions, and you serve it at room temperature. That's going to serve about 4 people, a nice bulgur, tomato, cucumber salad. And you talk about healthy. Absolutely beautiful for you. In fact, I'm going to make it tonight.
Healthy and delicious.
Healthy and good. Y'all, stay healthy and just think about it. It's not that hard. As I said, just kind of think about cutting back a little bit, eating healthier, and doing a little walking. We'll see you back next week.
There's a car, truck, or boat taking up space at your house, and you're finally ready to do something about it, KRVS just might be the answer. Your vehicle could be used to support public radio in our community through KRVS's car donation program. One phone call is all it takes. Whether it's running or not, we'll come and get the vehicle, send you a tax receipt when it sells, and you just supported KRVS. Call us now at 877- KRVS 887 or visit our website at krvs.org to learn more. And thanks. This week on Harpistry, we'll hear harps of Africa, the Kora, the Kamalingoni, and the Nyatidi. Tune in Sunday at midnight and Monday at noon, right here on KRVS.
This is Cody Hiltz. Join Danny and I for Japan Jukebox every Monday night at 11. We will showcase an hour of Japanese music from past to present, including a variety of artists from the indie rock scene of Japan to the most popular bands in the nation. Come along with us on a weekly journey to the land of the rising sun, Monday night at 11, here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Le rendez-vous des Cadiens du Théâtre Liberté à Yunis est rendu possible en partie par le Best Stop Supermarket de Scott.
Underwriting for Rendezvous des Cajuns live from the Liberty.